What would you say is the relevance of Kafka today?
But I think he's like timeless, frankly, you know, because the actualization is different in different times. Now it's many things, like superficial things, which are modern in him, the way he was communicating with the world, the fact that he was neuroatypical, the fact that he was sensitive in the way young people are sensitive today. But I think that what was deep, and also his family story, the way he was fighting with his family in the same time, couldn't liberate himself. That is, I think, quite relevant. But also his vision of what is humanity, or what prison we are in, becomes very relevant again. And that is the unhappy thing, because we don't want to live in the world of Franz Kafka. I knew that I cannot do it as a regular classical biopic linear and telling the life and dramatizing the informations and the things like that, that I have to, because he's so important to me and I have him, I connected to him on different periods of my life, that I have to put together all that pieces and puzzles and layers and try to throw it on you, hoping that it will come together. And somehow it is like, you know, it is like construction game that everyone can construct it in a slightly different way, right? That is multifunctional somehow. We've been thinking that it will be in the same time exciting and risky to do it in that way. But, you know, when I have to take the risk, if not now, it will be not relevant with him, with who he was, I think, and what he wrote about it. You cannot just make him another biopic. It was, you know, it was the first person which was shown to me by the casting director. It was two others on the same tape. And I say, ooh, we have him. And it was like, it was a luck, frankly. Because the look is important, of course. And in case of Kafka, is important because he's presented on so many, you know, objects and images, photographs and so on. So less or more, every cultivated person knows how Kafka looked like, which is not the case of every writers or geniuses. But also that kind of the inner soul, something which Idan has. He's like real reincarnation. He doesn't have Kafka's brain and talent, probably, like writing talent, certainly. But he has a similar kind of the sensibility, really. So it didn't need too much of direction from me, you know. He just found it. It was some letters of her which was found someplace. It was in some biographies we found some pieces, but it was also our imagination a bit. I identified very much with that sister, you know, because I had similar relation to Franz when I was young, that he's my brother and I can take care of him. I admire him because I will be never as special as he is, but in the same time, I know that he can fail any moment. So Otla, and I had the stories. I had a lot of stories from his family, from Otla's family, because her daughters survived when she divorced. Otla divorced with her Czech husband. She was sent to Theresienstadt and after to Auschwitz, and she died in Auschwitz. But the daughters, who have been half Czech, half Jewish, survived. My close friend, an actress, was adopted by the daughter of Otla. And after I met her son and daughter and grandson, so I had a lot of stories which been between about the, you know, relation between Otla and Franz, which been preserved in the family. So that was very, very touching source, actually.
Your poster reference David Cerny's statue, it seems, and the film references various sites about Kafka, the museum most prominently. What is your intention with these modern references?
Well, you know, when I came to Prague after the revolution, came back because I was a political immigrant, I couldn't go there. And when I came back, and after I started to come back quite often, and I made several movies in Prague, in the 2000-something, I was struck by the way how it became the city of Kafka in the most kitschy and most, you know, noisy way. But in the same time, it was so paradoxical and so funny because he was not published during the communism practically. So he didn't exist for Czechs for a long time. And after, when they gained the freedom, they also appropriate Kafka and his legacy and his brand and his market's value. So I found it so, you know, absurd and paradoxical that I wanted to connect it with his life and to see him when he's watching that. It was in some point, now it changed to different food, but yeah, in some point it was Kafka burger. Yeah, everything is on the surface, and we are so easily manipulated by the, you know, by whatever, any kind of publicity or, you know, or media or social media and so. But in the same time, maybe the way to preserve him, you know, maybe one of millions of people who just went on the Kafka tour and bought the T-shirt and, you know, hat, maybe they will finally take the book and read it. So maybe it's not so bad altogether. I was adapting The Trial for Polish television in 1980, and it was, I think, very successful. Yeah, but no one out of Poland hadn't seen it, because it was made just as a kind of the television, you know, blaze. But I it was one of the most interesting and enriching intellectually work of mine, for me, for myself, because I had to deconstruct it completely and then reconstruct with finding the key. And I had impression that I really found the key. I was so sure that I got it. And actually, I watched it before making France now, and it's good. It's really good. The concept was that Joseph K., the accused, is not Franz Kafka, because in most of adaptation you have the actor who looks like Kafka, who is, you know, frail and neurotic, and, you know. But I thought it's not true. No, it's Hermann. It's his father. Joseph K. is his father. And slowly during the trial, he becomes Franz. So by the end, when he's dying, he's Franz. So that it was my idea. And it worked, I think, pretty well.
Even though Kafka struggled with traditional images of masculinity, we see him actually as a much more masculine figure in this film than in many other films, where he seems pretty much remote. Here he's more romantically and sexually active. Why did you make that decision to portray him this way?
I think that he wasn't effeminate or something like that. He was incredibly uncertain about his physicality and his body, and afraid of touches and the things like that. But I think that he was a sexual being. It means, I'm pretty sure. So he wasn't the bipolar, bisexual. He was neuroatypical for sure, but he was, and he wanted to be a man. He wanted to be a husband, but at the same time he didn't want to, and he wanted to be a father, but what a horror to be a father, you know. So he was full of contradictions, and he wanted to escape something, to reach something. I think that to make his image as some kind of the exactly bisexual or asexual, rather, which is mostly, you know, how he's presented, it is not relevant. It's not right. Well, you always want to try to make something, you know, to go further, but we'll see.